It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
These people have taken over a vast part, a major part, a very good part of a place called Seattle. Seattle's big stuff. That's a major city. And we have a governor who's a stiff, and we have a mayor who said, oh, this is going to be a love fest. And by the way, these are violent people that took it over. These are not people that are nice people. No, if they don't do the job, I'll do the job. And I've already spoken to the Attorney General about it.
All right, that was the President of the United States talking about what's happening in Seattle. Meanwhile, things are happening. In fact, there was unrest just last night in Portland, Oregon. A lot of burning, a lot of rioting. And so the President today is going to be signing an executive order that's going to blend the need for law and order and also some of the concerns of Black Americans. And he's trying to bring people together by doing this. My understanding just came in my box a few minutes ago that he's going to propose creating credentialing and certification programs in every police department across the nation. He's going to suggest information sharing, creating a national database that can track officers with excessive use of force complaints so they can't skip from department to department. And incentivize co-responder programs, have mental health experts accompanying officers on responses to nonviolent calls involving homelessness, addiction, or other mental health issues. He says the overall goal is we want law and order, but it's also about justice and it's about safety. So that's going to happen at noon, and we'll find out more about that when it does happen. Meanwhile, people are going crazy after the shooting of another Black man, of course, in Atlanta. The result of that was that a Wendy's was burned to the ground, and so more things are happening. Let's listen to Jonathan Seary's report this morning from Fox. It's clip two.
You can see behind me the shrine to Rayshard Brooks keeps getting larger and larger. Things here are quiet right now, but we do expect more protests as we go later into the day. Take a look at these scenes from yesterday. Large numbers of demonstrators gathered around the Georgia Capitol in downtown Atlanta demanding hate crimes legislation and equal justice. And just a block away from the State House at City Hall, Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms announced immediate reforms to the police department to prioritize de-escalation and require officers to report all uses of deadly force and to intervene when they see a fellow officer using unnecessary force. Take a listen.
We saw the murder of Rayshard Brooks. And as I've said before, I am often reminded of the words of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. There is a fierce urgency of now in our communities.
Police released the 911 call that brought them to the Wendy's parking lot Friday night, where an employee found Brooks asleep in a car. Let's listen.
Okay, Tim, what's going on?
I have a car. I think he's intoxicated. He's in the middle of my drive-thru. I tried to wake him up, but he's parked dead in the middle of the drive-thru, so I don't know what's wrong with him.
Is he breathing, ma'am? Do you know?
Yeah, he woke up, looked at me, and I was like,
he won't. Is he black?
Wait, he black?
Internal affairs documents on the two responding officers show Garrett Rolfe, who was terminated after shooting Brooks, received a written reprimand back in 2017 for use of force involving a firearm. Fellow officer Devin Brosnan has no disciplinary history, and Steve Ainsley and Brian, the DA, of course, is looking over all the evidence in the case and expects to announce whether he will pursue criminal charges sometime in the middle of this week.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. Let me just say that we're learning more about what happened with Rayshard Brooks. In fact, I was able to get through a law enforcement periodical or publication the video of what happened to him when the police came upon him, the conversation between them, what happened afterwards. And we will post that article on our Facebook page. We're learning now that there are a lot of lies being told about what happened that night. You know, the shooting of the first gentleman that started all this, I told you right away up in Minneapolis that I thought that, from what I had seen, that was just unconscionable and it was murder. I didn't have any hesitance about that, but I can tell you that this is a very different issue, and lots of lies are being told about this. You heard the mayor just now. Although she hesitated initially, now she's calling it the murder. That's not the way I saw that. In fact, the Atlanta NAACP vice president is lying about it. He's Gerald Griggs claimed Saturday that Brooks was sleeping in the passenger side of his car in a parking lot when the police contacted him. The people are upset, Griggs said, according to WAGA. They want to know why their dear brother, Rayshard Brooks, was shot and killed when he was merely sleeping on the passenger side and not doing anything. Well, that's just not true. He was in the driver's side. He was inebriated, and they go through all of that in the dash cam. And he did. They had a very respectful exchange until Rayshard started fighting the police. They said he was inebriated and they needed to take him off the streets. That is the law. I mean, what do you think MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, is all about, and all these laws we passed in the last decade or more, probably 20 years, about taking drunk drivers off the road? That's what police do often. You know that, right? So they are arresting him, and that's when he starts fighting them, and they say, sir, don't fight, stop fighting. But he didn't stop, and he stole their taser, and he ran, and he leaned back and shot the taser at them. You could see it flash out, and that's when he shot. It's a very different situation. You hear his black supervisor, the policeman's black supervisor, come up and ask the policeman, "How are you okay? Well, are you all right? Have you called your wife?" It's just an amazing kind of video, and I think you should see it and understand that this is being used to fan the flames, and very successfully, of course, very successfully. All right, so, you know, as I've said to you before, have I not said this, but let me say it again, that there is wickedness in every color. It's this whole business of that all black men are innocent and all white cops are guilty is ridiculous. There are black cops and brown cops, policemen, I'd rather say. They come in all stripes, and they are good and they are bad, and it's the same thing of citizens. Some citizens are good, some are bad, are not good. And when we start telling our sons, I told you the story of my little boy, Jeremy, who threw a rock at a school bus, and the police came and rang my doorbell, the policeman, and insisted on talking to my son, who was about 7 years old. And he told him right there, you never run from the police, son. You don't run. You follow their instructions and you don't run. That's important. And I recognize the conflict among many black men because of the way they've been treated in the past, but the records do not show that the records are very clear that more black men are not killed by police. Actually, more white men, suspects, are killed by police now. This is on record. You can check the records, any public record, and you'll see that that's true. This is just a falsehood. But there's a great, that doesn't mean they're not treated differently. That doesn't mean that no policeman ever abused them because of color. That's not what it means. But it just means the stats show that there are not more black men killed by police. And a lot of the police, my understanding is most of the shooting of police of black men are by black policemen. Ironically, that's what the stats show. Not that that means, what does that mean? I don't know what that means. I'm just saying this is not an issue of color. It used to be. I don't think it is anymore for the most part. It doesn't mean there aren't racist policemen, but there are certainly racist criminals. Yeah, so racism is on both sides, and yet we're being propagandized. I want to talk about Black Lives Matter at a much greater detail, probably in the last segment today, so I'm going to save the rest of that discussion. I want to change, if I will, to the police, because this is a great report out of San Diego about a policeman. I just want to give you an idea of the kinds of things policemen do. In case you had forgotten, New York must have forgotten, because they just disbanded their plainclothes undercover police. So what a disaster lies ahead for these cities. What disaster. People are going to die. Women are going to be raped. People are going to be terrorized. This is what's going to happen. Meanwhile, in San Diego, this is the story from ABC of what one policeman did just recently, clip 6.
Pulling up to Sunset Cliffs, canine officer and former Marine Jonathan Weiss saw a crumpled truck against the cliffside.
My goal was get down there, get him out of the water. I could see him, and he had one of the girls in his arms. And I have a 2-year-old daughter at home. And so I imagine, you know, hey, what if that was my wife and kid down there? You know, you're not going to stand here on the cliff and watch it happen.
Pulse thumping as he thought quickly to use his SWAT canine leash to rappel down the side of the cliffs to get to the man and his 2-year-old twin daughters.
By then, about 4 or 5 other cops had shown up. So I just pretty much threw the end of the rope, the leash to them, and said, hang on. And then I just jumped off.
Successfully luring down to the family bobbing in the water, then debating how to rescue them.
I remember, hey, wait a minute, the Marines taught you how to do water safety rescues. So I had a little flashback on how just, okay, grab him under the armpit and push him. So I just swam, holding him and the girls above water.
Once on shore, the girls were hoisted up in a backpack so they could be taken to the hospital, and their father was lifted by a helicopter.
Would you say that he saved their lives 100%?
I believe he did.
San Diego Police Chief David Nislike.
Probably the most heroic thing I've seen in my 32 years.
Proud of Weiss, who is the Officer of the Year. Honored for a long list of heroic acts, including helping arrest the suspected Chabad of Poway shooter. All of this while police are under the nation's microscope.
I didn't do the job to be liked every day. I didn't do it to become rich. You know, I did it because I want to be out there making a difference and helping people, as cliche as that might sound, but you know, I'm just glad I could be there.
Protecting 2 toddlers when they needed him most.
Do what you gotta do, but then after everyone was safe, yeah, it hits you and you want to get home and hug your kids, that's for sure.
Cassie Carlisle, ABC 10 News.
All right, that was in San Diego. You should see the footage, and you should see that cliff, and you should see the water, and you should see the car. And he volunteered. He went down. He did that, went off the cliff and went down into the water and rescued those 2 little twins and the father also. So that's a policeman. But, you know, they're horrible, right? They're just horrible. And we have to do away with them, right? You must believe that. You must bow when an anthem is being played, because protest. You've got to protest against police brutality, because, of course, it's, you know, there's an epidemic of it in this country. According to some, there is not an epidemic. And the police, you know, even certainly blacks in the inner city know that. We just read this plaintiff plea from a black policeman in New York about how he'd grown up in the hood and now that's his beat every day and what he does to try to save lives. He's there every single day and how disrespected he is. But they know in their heart of hearts that he protects them. So the black communities are in such jeopardy, especially Chicago, my hometown, where so many are murdered and murdered and murdered their kids. Talk about mortality rate for your teenage black boys and the little girls too. Shot through houses. The gang violence is just unbelievable. It's black on black crime. And if the police go away, I guess black lives really don't matter. Not really. To those that are pushing for this, they really don't matter. No lives matter, actually. This is we're entering an age of brutality, and I will get into that in just a second. But I want to get to this. Texas has delivered a very powerful warning that they better not destroy the Alamo. George P. Bush, who's the son of former Governor Jeb Bush of Florida, says the Alamo is the shrine of Texas liberty. And he said, we will deploy Alamo Rangers in partnership with the San Antonio Police Department. Don't mess with the Alamo, said Bush. Meanwhile, Boston is considering removing an Abraham Lincoln statue that shows it's a replica of something in Washington. He's over a freed slave. And they want to take it down because somehow it's just unseemly. The fact that Abraham Lincoln freed the slaves, and that the slaves, according to history and all that I've read, and I've read a ton of it, the slaves adored Abraham Lincoln, and they stayed around Washington because they were so grateful because of what he had done and how he had freed them. But that statue, they want it to come down too. By the way, speaking of that, we have a problem with our legislators because they are showing zero courage on any of these issues. I think of Senator James Lankford in Oklahoma, who said to George Stephanopoulos over the weekend, he agrees that names of military bases should be changed because, you know, it's offensive. And only somebody who was never in the military could never understand the insignificance of the names of these military bases and how they transcend whether these generals were from the South or wherever they were from. And by the way, the president will be in Tulsa Saturday, June the 20th. The left is advertising for actors, excited and enthusiastic minority actors and actresses to hold signs at the event. It's going to be right across from where the president is, and you have to know they're not talking about peaceful protests. So there, over 1 million people are expected to be there Saturday, June 20th in Tulsa. Sandy Rios in the morning.
Every day, babies in their mother's wombs are fighting for life.
with abortion being the leading cause of death.
I already had my mind made up. I was like, I'm going to go through with it.
The Ministry of Preborn has pregnancy centers nationwide, standing by to help young moms in crisis choose life. Preborn is the largest provider of free ultrasounds in the country. By letting a mother see her baby in the womb and hear the heartbeat, she's 80% more likely to choose life for her baby.
I came seeking termination, but once I got here and I took an ultrasound, I was overjoyed when I found out that I was having three baby boys.
Preborn's mission is to help save babies' lives and souls. To find out more, go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Or dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 and say baby. Your love can save a life.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for Nicole Nason, Administrator for the Federal Highway Administration. Ms. Nason's division focuses on transportation issues on America's highways. Psalm 119, verse 105, reminds us of the importance of letting the Lord guide us in our travels. Your word is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask for wisdom and guidance for Nicole Nason as she oversees our country's transportation issues. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
I've got to tell you guys about MyPillow. I sleep like a baby. And MyPillow has an incredible offer. Buy one, get one free pricing on MyPillows, the rolls, go anywhere pillows. Just go to the radio listener's special page at MyPillow.com. Use the promo code Starnes or call 1-800-839-8506. And if you order Mike's book, your entire MyPillow order will ship free. Plus, you get a $25 gift card for your next purchase. Call 1-800-839-8506. Or go to the radio listener special page at MyPillow.com, promo code Starnes.
In my new book, Culture Jihad, How to Stop the Left from Killing a Nation, I write about the promise President Obama made to his supporters back in 2007. Said he wanted to fundamentally transform America. And he did, right under our very noses. It wasn't in the halls of Congress. It was in our nation's public school system. Obama was able to radicalize a generation of young people without their parents even knowing what was going on. That's why so many Generation Zers and millennials hate our nation. They hate our value system. They hate the police. Case in point, Berklee College of Music in Boston. The school apologized for letting police officers use the bathroom on campus. The college says they perpetrated feelings of oppression, silencing, and marginalization and promised to never let it happen again. Now, it seems to me if Berklee College of Music is no longer going to let police officers step foot in a bathroom, we also need to make sure no federal tax dollars end up on their campus either. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
The Supreme Court has ruled that federal law prohibits discrimination in the workplace on the basis of sexual orientation. Now, this decision expands the understanding of the landmark Civil Rights Act of 1964 to include sexual orientation alongside race, gender, and religion. That decision was 6-3. Two Republican-appointed justices, Neil Gorsuch and Chief Justice John Roberts, joined with the democratically appointed judges in order to deliver that majority opinion, which states in part, because discrimination on the basis of homosexuality or transgender status requires an employer to intentionally treat individual employees differently because of their sex, an employer who intentionally penalizes an employee for being homosexual or transgender violates Title VII of the Civil Rights Act. Now, guys, currently only 21 states have laws on the books that protect gay workers from discrimination. So this is being seen as a major win for gay rights advocates, and we'll have to see how it plays out in companies and states across America.
Well, I think certainly it was a major win, and it was a shocking decision for those of us following this. In fact, let me read from Daniel Horowitz's piece this morning. Conservatives get massacred by fake conservative SCOTUS. With 35 minutes today at 10 a.m. Eastern, what some thought was the most conservative Supreme Court of all time concocted a fundamental right to transgenderism in the context of labor law. erased the Second Amendment and interfered with a state death penalty case, but declined to interfere with a California law that criminalizes law enforcement cooperation with federal immigration agents. Taken in totality, the conservative legal movement, which has promoted the idea of appointing better judges rather than fighting the entire concept of judicial supremacism, has failed miserably. It's Waterloo. That's what Daniel Horowitz says. But I want to know what Carrie Severino thinks. Carrie is the Judicial Crisis Network's chief legal counsel and also its policy director. This is something that's her heartbeat is this. She lives and breathes what happens at the Supreme Court. She clerked for Justice Thomas, and she joins us this morning. Carrie, good morning.
Sandy, how are you doing?
I'm good, Carrie. Let's talk about first this big piece about the Civil Rights Act. First of all, describe to us, the Civil Rights Act prevents discrimination based on sex, but what they did was interpret sex to mean something broader, right?
Right. So the words, we're kind of familiar with, no discrimination because of sex, race, national origin, religion, all of these, this litany you often hear. And that's the language that's in the 1964 Civil Rights Act. There's also a lot of other civil rights laws that mirror that language, many of whom have actually added language or because of sexual orientation or because of gender identity. You've got nearly two dozen states who've done that. Many federal laws have done that. That's because discrimination because of sex is different than discrimination because of sexual orientation. Simply, they're different concepts. Are you discriminating against women or against men because they're women or men, or are you discriminating against someone because of their homosexual lifestyle? That's a different concept. So we have different ways to express it in law, and generally, when there's more than one way to express a legal concept, the interpretive standard is you don't assume that one word means a different word that you already have something for. Unfortunately, the decision the Supreme Court came down with yesterday was that discrimination because of sex includes all those other concepts. And so that promises a real sea change in American law because it's suddenly redefining this whole concept of what it means to discriminate because of sex. It has a lot of implications, particularly for religious freedom, for freedom of speech, for the ability of things like women's sports to continue if discrimination because of sex also means that you have to allow biological men to then participate in women's sports because they identify as women. That could really be the death knell for all of women's sports, for the ability to have single-sex restrooms and locker rooms. The long-ranging implications, although the court disclaimed any decisions on those, the logic, as Robbie George said earlier today, the logic simply you can't run away from.
Yes, but they did want to run away from it. It was a 6-3 decision, and that's what's amazing about this. I think we need to talk about Kerry, Neil Gorsuch. He wrote the majority opinion. That was John Roberts and Neil Gorsuch and the other liberal members of the court. The only people dissenting were Alito and Justice Thomas and, help me, Kavanaugh. I'm Justice Kavanaugh.
Yeah, Justice Kavanaugh.
All right, so did we see this coming with Neil Gorsuch?
In one sense, no, in terms of the fact that he really continues to have a record where, of all the justices in the court, he's most likely to agree with Justice Thomas. He is a textualist. He is an originalist. However, I supported him. I still support him generally, but I'm not going to not call it out when I think he gets one wrong. I think he did get this wrong. We saw some hints of this in the oral arguments, really, when he seemed to be caught up in the idea that, well, homosexuality or transgenderism have to do with sex, so maybe then it is correct to say it is because of sex that they're being discriminated against. I think that is a real error. Justice Alito pointed out that there's a lot of things that have to do with sex. So say someone was sexually harassing people at the job, and then you fired them. That is related to sex, but it doesn't mean that now you're discriminating based on sex if you do that. So we can't interpret the because of sex in such a broad way. I think he got kind of wrapped up in the axle on this decision. But I do think it's not likely to be a pattern with him, or I certainly hope that's the case. We obviously will be keeping an eye on things going forward.
Let's talk about the cases that this decision, yeah. There were two cases, as I understand it. Maybe if we talked about them just a second, it would help us understand what the repercussions of this is. What the Bostic and Altitude Express, I don't really know that case. I'm more familiar with the Harris Funeral Home. Mm-hmm. But what's the Bostic and Altitude Express case?
So those are two cases in which employees claimed they had been fired because they were homosexual. Now, there's facts in the record that that's not the reason they were fired, but what the defense that the employers were stating is, no. It says even if you were correct, which we're not conceding, but even if you were correct, that's not even forbidden by law. And so now I think what the courts are going to have to do is go back and see if that's the reason they were fired in the first place. One of them was it worked in community services. One of the men involved was a flight. I'm trying to think of the word now, like skydiving instructor. So those are the two cases that had to do with sexual orientation. The case that had to do with transgenderism, as you mentioned, sir, at funeral home. This was a man who worked at a funeral home, and then at some point transitioned and wrote a letter to his boss saying, I feel that I am a woman. I'm going to be, in the future, dressing as a woman and identifying as a woman at work. And the employer, who was a Christian, said not only is this kind of contrary to his beliefs, but also he was concerned that in the case of his clients who are suffering and in a time of grieving themselves, that it would be a distraction and not suitable in that context of a funeral situation to have them confronting those issues. So, and that was, so that case had to do with the transgender question.
So, Carrie, the thing of it, okay, I want to paint a picture here, a mental picture. So this guy at Harris Funeral Home has now a man who looks very much like a man, dressing as a woman, greeting grieving families. That's the whole point.
Right.
And he didn't want that to be the case. So now he has the Supreme Court said, oh, yeah, you can't fire him based on that. That's basically what this is about. Of course, that's a very small telling of it. That's just one case. But about the religious freedom issue, Liberty Counsel Matt Staver sort of thinks that there are still some protections because of the First Amendment rights, religious freedom laws. Do you see it that way? And did this decision in any way address religious freedoms and hiring in churches and all of that?
So there certainly are backstop protections. There's the First Amendment, of course. There's the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, the law that was in question in Hobby Lobby that says that religious freedom continues despite other laws that may appear to conflict with it. So we do have those things. The challenge is it's very unclear exactly how courts are going to interpret them, and there are many courts that are very hostile to the concept of religious freedom. The court basically disclaimed the ability to make any future determinations on that, and I think that's worrisome because now we'll have dozens of courts throughout the nation being the next line of defense, and unfortunately none of those, as I said, they're hostile to religious freedom, and the vast, vast majority of cases don't make it back up to the Supreme Court. 99% plus of cases don't make it back up. So for the individual business owner who's concerned that this is going to have an impact on their business or the church or the religious school who is concerned about, okay, am I going to be required to hire people who are then teaching by their lifestyle something opposed to the values that this school is supposed to be teaching the students, many of them won't be able to afford to fight these cases in court and have no guarantee that they're going to get a fair hearing from the judges who are in many cases judicial activists themselves.
Yes, and so I agree. Listen, this I'm not as the not expert on this issue. I've seen this happen before, just when they were forcing way back in the old days when they were just forcing people to hire they wanted to force people in churches to hire homosexual, whatever, pastors, organists, whatever. They were splitting of hair about all what that meant. But I remember in Chicago, they did for a time. They were going to completely, they don't intend to make churches exempt from these rules. If anybody thinks that that's the end game or that anyone that's pushing this is concerned about that, you're just wrong. Then nothing will be sacred. And certainly in this climate we're facing right now where we're becoming so anti-religious and against churches are really suffering in many other ways. I just can't see protections holding against them. I really can't see that. So, Carrie, my understanding is that this actually will contradict many executive orders or initiatives. Sorry, not executive orders, I don't think, but that are being put forward by Health and Human Services on various issues, that this will completely undermine. In fact, that the Human Rights Campaign has already laid down the gauntlet saying they're going to challenge a lot of really great initiatives that are being started by Health and Human Services. You want to say something about that?
So there is that. There's a regulation that recently was promulgated that returns the understanding of the meaning of the basis of sex to historically what it always was until the Obama administration, which is that it means on the basis of sex, not sexual orientation, not gender identity, et cetera. There's also other areas within, you know, Title IX, for example, that the Education Department is working on trying to ensure that women's sports, for example, can continue at the college level. And frankly, this case even impacts professional women's sports. If women's sports teams are required to allow biological men who identify as women to compete, it's really not an even playing field for women. So they're losing scholarships. They could be losing job opportunities. If the WNBA is taken over by biologically male athletes, how is that going to be good for women's athletics? And I think there are a lot of real concerns, and there's some things that the Education Department is also working on that this definitely undermines. So while this case technically, on its terms, is limited to just this employment law question, it has so many implications. Justice Alito's dissent kind of goes through that. Bathrooms, locker rooms, all of these things, the court says, well, we don't want to get into that. Sure, but, you can't hide from the fact that the logical implications are going to go there.
Carrie, it has to be said that one of the reasons we're in this position is because the Senate and the House, our legislative body, has just been AWOL on all of these controversial issues. They don't want to take a position on it, so they've abdicated to the courts, and the courts just keep making these decisions. In fact, I was just seeing that a significant Republican senators are just fine with this. Deb Fischer of Nebraska, Chuck Grassley was speaking very positively about it. Ted Cruz is not. John Thune, Mitt Romney, not upset about this, and I'm sure the list goes on. The problem is that we don't have any champion. We just have no champion for basic issues of morality and common sense. Okay, I would say Judicial Crisis Network is an exception to the rule. Carrie, in fact, I want to ask you a personal question. People probably know that I know you personally, but I know you and Roger have like 6 kids, and you live in D.C. Mm-hmm. And do you feel any kind of danger ever right now?
If you read the pretty hateful stuff in my Twitter feed right now, it is a real concern. I think it's frightening to be in a world where opposing points of view, rather than let's have a debate about what we believe, is an immediate jump to, oh, well, your opinion must be because you hate all people who are different than you, or because you want to destroy other people personally, or you're a horrible person. That's a real concern. We've seen it in the debates on the George Floyd murder as well, where people are saying, are opening the door to destruction of other people, of silencing, or just canceling people, even because they are not simply vociferously loud enough in favor of your opinion. It's an unnerving situation to live in, and I think that we all would want to fight for a world where we can disagree, but disagree respectfully, and that's the way I would like to raise my children, to be able to have those debates with people without vilifying the other person and being able to respect them as children of God as well, because that's at the end of the day, we all are, even if we may disagree with each other, even very fervently.
Yeah, absolutely. And certainly millions of Americans agree with you, Carrie. We just don't seem to have any champions right now. Very few, not enough. We've got too many people caving, especially in Washington. But not you. I'm talking about the elected leaders. Mm-hmm. And someone in the White House is holding fast, but he is continually isolated. So we're going to keep fighting. I know you are, too. We're not going to quit fighting out here. Millions of people support what you're doing, Carrie, and millions of people support the president, as exhibited in Tulsa next Saturday when the population of Tulsa isn't even a million people, have signed up to go and see him because of the policies, because they see what's happening in the country, and they want to fight back. So, Carrie Severino, Judicial Crisis Network. Carrie, always a pleasure. Stay safe, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right, Sandy, when we come back, I'm going to talk about Black Lives Matter and what Carrie touched on there, the intimidation factor and the lack of free speech, because it's stunning, and you need to know, because if they won't fight for us, then we're going to have to fight this battle ourselves. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Then Saul clothed David with his armor. He put a helmet of bronze on his head and clothed him with a coat of mail. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. 40 days of twice daily taunting from Goliath sent Saul and the Israelite army reeling in fear. But David's passion for Yahweh, conviction, and full persuasion stirred King Saul. When people are on fire for God, it often provokes others to glob onto that fire. But we must be careful to resist the well-meaning overtures of the flameless bystanders. Saul meant well, but his armor couldn't help. It would only slow David down.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner, or visit the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Does God exist? Is the Bible true? Does truth exist?
When people say there is no truth, I simply ask them this question. Is that true?
Join us this weekend for Cross-Examined with Frank Turek, author of the bestseller, I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist.
I actually think it takes more faith not to believe in the truthfulness of the Bible than it does to believe in the Bible.
Cross-Examined with apologist Frank Turek, Saturday morning at 9 Central and Sunday afternoon at 4 Central on American Family Radio.
Ryan DeFrady's secret agent is back.
What is it, boss? Ninjas? An army of robotic sharks?
Ryan and his mom, or partner, overcome obstacles.
Hang in there, honey!
And outlaws.
I'm ready.
In some very unlikely settings. Kids from 6 to 12 will love these animated adventures. And they'll hardly know they're learning about forgiveness, telling the truth, and respecting authority.
You can do it, Mom!
Available now at afastore.net.
The wicked flee when no one pursues, but the righteous are bold as a lion. Brian Fisher here with an excerpt from the Boy to Man book. Some men are so timid the sound of a driven leaf shall put them to flight. Other men in the same circumstances have the inner strength to be immovable in the face of danger. That's the kind of man God wants you to be. There won't be many times in your life when you will face a choice between standing for principle or caving to pressure, but those times will come, and they will be the defining moments of your life. Athanasius was exiled 6 times for defending the truth of Scripture. When told that the whole world was against him, he said, "Then Athanasius is against the whole world." What will you do when it's your turn in the barrel? Order a copy of the Boy to Man book today as a father's gift at afastore.net.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Many Americans have been shocked by the recent seemingly spontaneous and fundamental transformation of their beloved country. Fueled by a pandemic and widespread disorder, sweeping changes in public policy, our economy and lives are undermining our freedoms and security. Amidst this turmoil, some senior retired military officers have denounced President Trump's efforts to restore order as a threat to the Constitution rather than an effort, per oaths both he and they have sworn, to defend it. We are reaping the whirlwind sown by our failure to prevent the decades-long march of Marxists through our various institutions. Millions of students educated by them, businesses influenced by them, politicians tied to them, and officers promoted by them are on the march, literally as well as figuratively. The rest of us will not recognize or be welcome in the transformed nation that's their intended destination. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell is now admitting, that the league was wrong for not listening to players as they took a knee to promote social justice here in the United States. And he's now formally apologizing. Listen to this.
It has been a difficult time for our country, in particular, black people in our country. First, my condolences to the families of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, and all the families who have endured police brutality. We, the National Football League, condemn racism and the systematic oppression of black people. We, the National Football League, admit we were wrong for not listening to NFL players earlier and encourage all to speak out and peacefully protest. We, the National Football League, believe Black Lives Matter. I personally protest with you and want to be part of the much-needed change in this country. Without Black players, there would be no National Football League. And the protests around the country are emblematic of the centuries of silence, inequality, and oppression of Black players, coaches, fans, and staff. We are listening. I am listening. And I will be reaching out to players who have raised their voices and others on how we can improve and go forward for a better and more united NFL family.
All right, so that's Roger Goodell along with Wolf Blitzer on CNN. And, of course, Roger Goodell explaining, of course, could I just say that, yes, of course, Black Lives Matter. And, of course, Black players make up a huge amount of the NFL. Thank God for them. We love watching them play. But it does not translate to kneeling, bowing, repenting to other people, not to God. It doesn't translate to that. And I'm going to explain to you what's going on here in just a second. By the way, Roger Goodell is now asking for some team to please recruit Colin Kaepernick, because Colin Kaepernick was only bowing the knee during the national anthem, not any other time, but just during the national anthem. No disrespect to the flag, just you know, protesting police brutality while he had socks that said pigs on it, while he was, firmly supporting Black Lives Matter, calling the police racist pigs. But that's okay, you see, because, you know, he's mistreated Colin Kaepernick, the former quarterback, making whatever money he was making, very mistreated. And so he should be honored and rehired. In fact, I want to give you an idea of, just to remind you, Black Lives Matter, when they started, were marching in the streets, and they were chanting this fetching slogan. Let's listen to clip 14.
Peace in a blanket!
Crime like bacon!
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 Pigs in a blanket, frying like bacon. Talking about the police, that's Black Lives Matter. And wow, so we should really, really support people who feel that way, right? They should be elevated, praised, rehired. We should bow next to them during the national anthem. We should disgrace our anthem and praise these people who believe the police are pigs. That's what Roger Goodell is saying. Now NASCAR, same thing. They're going to allow protests during the national anthem. And the NFL player, remember Drew Brees spoke up about the sanctity of the flag, his grandfather's fighting in World War II. He wrote an eloquent piece about why he was not going to kneel and why it was offensive to him. And of course, he was roundly put down, especially by Malcolm Jenkins, who is the newly New Orleans Saint safety. And he was told to shut the blank up and about how hurtful it had been and blah, 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 blah. And then Drew Brees did a mea culpa, a mea culpa, a mea culpa. His wife did a mea culpa. And now Malcolm Jenkins, the eloquent blank you to Drew Brees, has been hired as a CNN contributor. So and then we have Christianity Today, with an article by their editor calling for churches to pay reparations to Black people. Repentance is not enough. That's what CEO Timothy Dalrymple in his editorial said in Christianity Today. He said slavery is one of America's original sins, adding that the Christian church was silent in the face of slavery or even complicit with it. Now, that's really not true. The Southern churches may have been complacent, but the Northern churches were not. In fact, it was a great move of God through his people that started much of the Civil War. I remember the Uncle Tom's Cabin, which I know a lot of Black people have such a... If you've ever read it, it's actually very powerful. It's a very powerful statement against slavery. But of course, it's twisted because everything is twisted right now. But it was by a Christian telling the story, and it was a book that woke up so many Americans to the tragedy of slavery, and that's what fueled the Civil War. And what do you think? Who do you think did the abolition movement? Who do you think was involved in that? Who do you think did the Underground Railroad? It was Christians, and certainly Northern Christians who were ahead of their Southern brothers and sisters at that time were championing freeing the slaves. Abraham Lincoln's own parents were part of the abolition movement in the church that he attended in Kentucky. And so, I mean, really, don't tell me that, Timothy Dalrymple. You should know better than that. And I think it's some churches, yes, but not all churches, not the broad. In fact, it was William Wilberforce, the Christian, who single-handedly for 20 years fought against slavery in Great Britain. So don't tell me that Christians had nothing to do with eliminating that. NASCAR is going to allow protests during the national anthem now. So what's this all about? I want to just for a second, before I get into Black Lives Matter, as much time as I have here, turn to the football player Burgess Owens. I always want to call him Burgess Meredith, which is really kind of funny because that's not exactly who he is. Burgess Owens, a former NFL player, had this to say about his thoughts about kneeling at the anthem. Let's listen, clip 10.
Burgess, is this catching fire inside the NFL, taking a knee? And what do you make of the president saying he's not going to watch if that happens?
Hi, Harris. Well, I'm going to join the president, of course. And like many of Americans, this time it's for good. You know, what we have as a commissioner, unlike every other commissioner we've had in the past who cares for their brand, who cares for unity, we have a Bill de Blasio of a commissioner with Goodell. And history's going to turn back and show him who he is. He's a leftist. I could have predicted 4 years ago, Harris, that there was going to be riots in the streets because this is the election year. You're going to hear from every single Democratic guest, get out the vote, get out the vote. If we have an ideology that cares more about more about their power, they care about the unity of our country. And I'll tell you what, the real impact, you're going to see young kids, like I saw last go round, 7, 8 years old, sit on their helmet when the flag flies because they have no clue. No one's teaching them about respect, about our country, about respect for people, respect for women. They're told to go out there and do their own thing and not worry about respecting anything. That's what we're fighting against. We're fighting for our culture. Wow. And this commissioner is not doing it at all any of us a favor by going his leftist ways and trying to get Democrats elected this go around. I want my friends out there to realize this is what the left does. They make you feel guilty. It is about the flag, period. It started with the flag, with Carpenter's as a Marxist. There's a pro-communist a Marxist who talk about pigs and about the racism of our country. This country is the greatest country in the history of mankind. So my white friends out there, don't let your white guilt destroy my race. We have black kids that are trying to find leadership because we don't have it anymore. Democratic policies have taken our fathers out of the home. Stand up, man up, let's stand for our flag. Demonstrate some other time. Demonstrate when everybody can come together and say, let's work on this deal and get it tied down. Not when our flag is flying, not when we understand how much has been paid for the price for us to come together for once, at one time, and not worry about politics.
That was Burgess Owens. Did you hear that? Don't let your white friends, don't let your white guilt destroy my race. Don't let your white guilt destroy my race. Burgess Owens. Of course, he's the wrong kind of black guy. Yeah, see, we're not supposed to think a lot of him. And I'm sure he will be silenced. If they have their way, he will be silenced. Colin Kaepernick, now he's the hero. He is the hero. The Marxist pigs in a blanket, pigs on his socks. The hate police guy who, you know, just wants to show how oppressed he is by kneeling during the American flag. He's the hero. So right now, that is the story. I just hope and pray this will change. But right now it's not changing, and I want to bring your attention now to Black Lives Matter. This will be a short discussion. We have done a lengthy discussion on this in the past, and we will repeat that. But today I want to give you a crash course again so that you understand what we're up against here. And I think I'm going to start by playing just a portion. Tucker Carlson did a long, long piece. It was 17 minutes last night. We will put it on our Facebook page. I want you to listen to it because Tucker lays out so many things in such a clear way as he does. But basically, he kind of lays the groundwork in this first couple of minutes about who Black Lives Matter really is. And by the way, they are targeting Tucker right now. Three of his advertisers have dropped out. I think that's Disney and another couple of advertisers. They're trying to get him off the air, just so you know. At some point, I may just play that whole 17 minutes of Tucker because he needs to be heard. And so we're going to hear him. We're just going to hear the first 2 minutes of that 17-minute clip, which we'll put on our Facebook page. Let's listen to him describe what's happening with Black Lives Matter, Tucker Carlson.
Black Lives Matter is now more popular than the president of the United States, and not slightly more popular than the president, much more popular. A survey this week by Rasmussen, a right-leaning pollster, found that 62% of likely voters now have a favorable opinion of Black Lives Matter. At the same time, Rasmussen found that Donald Trump's approval rating was 43%. That's almost 20 points lower. And by the way, Trump was not alone. Black Lives Matter is far more popular than Joe Biden is, too. It's more popular than America's religious institutions, all of them. It's more popular than the media, the Congress, and big business. Black Matters is more popular by double digits than both the Democratic and the Republican parties. It's almost as popular as the U.S. military. It's much more popular than the Pope. The numbers are astounding, but the polls are not the only measure of it. Here's a Black Lives Matter rally from over the weekend in New York. Look at that picture. That is an ocean of people. Ask yourself the last time you saw a candidate for office who was able to draw a crowd like that. The media, in their relentlessly fawning coverage, usually describe Black Lives Matter as an activist group or a protest movement. But that's deception by understatement. Black Lives Matter is not a collection of marchers with signs. It's not a conventional political lobby like Planned Parenthood or the NRA. It's not pressuring Congress to pass some narrow new set of laws. Black Lives Matter is far more ambitious than that. It is working to remake the country and then to control it. It's a political party. As of tonight, Black Lives Matter may be the single most powerful political party in the United States. Nobody says that out loud, but politicians understand it perfectly well. If nothing else, they understand power. They can smell it at great distances. And that's why they're lining up to bow before Black Lives Matter.
All right, so that's just a bit of that 17-minute opening we're going to put on our Facebook page, but I want to fill in a lot of blanks here. My good friend Stella Morabito, who Stella was part of the left in the 60s, and she's brilliant about what she was an academic, and so she's brilliant about what's inside this. She's written a great piece called How Socialists Like Black Lives Matter Weaponize Our Fears of Loneliness. Now, let me say that Black Lives Matter is an international group. They are being funded by corporations, by Hollywood, by George Soros. They have millions and millions of dollars. They've actually been saying online, don't send us any more money. Send your money here or send your money there. They have too much money. Can you imagine? They have too much money. But they are an international Marxist movement. It's worldwide upheaval they want. Trust me, it has nothing to do with protecting poor black people. This is like, that reminds me of the SPLC, the Southern Poverty Law Center, which has got such a great name, and they're about defending blacks, right? No, really. When you get into what they do, they're about defending transgenders, anything in the LGBT movement, and also Islamists. That's really where they spend their time and money. And yet their name as the Southern Poverty Law Center and their history makes you think they're helping black people. Well, so does Black Lives Matter. Well, Black Lives Matter is an obviously true statement, and so who could argue against that? Of course they matter. So here's the slogan, and who can deny it and better bow the knee to it? Or you are a racist. But this is how it works. If you read the Black Lives Matter website, you'll find lots of Marxist agenda items, ending constitutional self-governance, abolishing the rule of law. They want to get rid of the police. They want to empty the prisons. They want to destroy the nuclear family. They want to use collectivist forms of child rearing. They want to grab power through intimidation and fear. And then they also want to scare you psychologically. Here's something in the New York Times that explains. It says, to your relatives and loved ones, telling them you will not be visiting them or answering phone calls until they take significant action in supporting black lives, either through protests or financial contributions. We have to bow. We have to. And of course, Stella goes on to say that they threaten, like, you must think like the group, or you will be isolated. And it's a vicious cycle, and it's a fear technique. And she also says that when they are done with this, violence will break out like we can't even imagine. It seems like not very long ago, I told you violence was the next step. I told you about how Joseph Stalin discovered violence in his takeover of his own country. And so I'm just telling you all of this to warn and equip you. And we may at some point have to take the reins of our own safety. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.